The following program is a PodcastOne.com production. Recorded live backstage, this is Geffen Playhouse Unscripted. Now, here's your host, John Horn.
Hey there, I'm John Horn, and today on Geffen Playhouse Unscripted, we're going to be talking with Beth Behrs. You probably know her as an actor. She's on Two Broke Girls. She's also a producer. She is doing a web comic. She has written a book. She's an activist. She does some very interesting work with horses. Stick around, Beth Behrs on Geffen Playhouse Unscripted.
Happy birthday to us. Happy birthday to us. That's right, the Lady Aim podcast is turning 100. We have laughed, cried, giggled, unfiltered through 100 episodes, and we want you to join us for our 100th birthday extravaganza. We're looking back at all the best moments, the funniest moments, the best advice we got from our 100 guests, and we want you to join us. So come find us on Tuesday, and you can find us exclusively at PodcastOne.com or the new Podcast One app. And don't forget to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts so we can feel famous.
Now back to Geffen Playhouse Unscripted.
Beth Behrs, welcome to Geffen Playhouse Unscripted.
Thank you.
So how's that for an entrance? I muffed my only line, which is welcome.
Like a true actor.
I know. It's like, I'm sure you've had shows where you go on. It's like, all I have to say is hello.
And when you have like a whole new monologue or a new line and it's your first time saying it out loud, of course. But that's why there's a take two. Unless you're doing theater, in which case you got to keep going.
There is no take two. There's just on with the show. Pretend like you know what you're doing.
Exactly.
I want to hear about your what the Geffen Playhouse meant to your career, because it's –
it's
if I understand
everything.
It's an unusual story, right? You're
it's
working
a great
there.
Story. I was a UCLA theater student and I started working there. I couldn't remember today. I was trying to remember if it was my freshman year or my sophomore year, but I worked there all throughout UCLA. And then, I mean, I was still working as a concierge when I booked the pilot of Two Broke Girls.
So this is the important part of the story. You're working at the Geffen Playhouse. But not on stage.
Yes, I was an usher, a concierge, a bartender. I worked with Regina in development and did just whatever temp work I could. They were amazing. I always had a home and a job between auditions and work and everything.
Well, the nice thing is the Playhouse is across the street from UCLA, so it's a very easy commute. But what does a concierge at a Playhouse do?
Yes, well... at the Geffen, it's a lot of – you're dealing with a lot of the listening devices for the mostly matinee crowds. You have to take –
that was a very nice way of not saying older people who can't hear. But okay, very discreet.
You have to take the driver's license. No, you would just direct people if they needed, you know, recommendations to go to dinner. It was all that – you would answer the phones for the Geffen at night, you know, if people need to be transferred to a voicemail. I had to know all about the history. You know, it used to be a Masonic lodge and a furniture store. That beautiful brick is still – you know, the same brick that was in the lodge. It's great. I had the best friends that are still my best friends who I met there. And yeah, it's awesome.
So did somebody see you walking around and say, let me give you a card, some kind of creepy encounter like that? Or were you off auditioning while you're working at Geffen?
It was funny. There was, Hershey Felder did an amazing show there about Gershwin. And every night on stage, he would let me come up and sing on stage, someone to watch over me. There was like a part where he would open it up for the audience to, you know, who knows this song? But then we would have it like planned that he would pick me and be like, the usher in the back wants to sing this song. So I got to perform like once on the Geffen stage in that play.
And was that the night the casting agents for Two Broke Girls were there?
Well, there was a casting agent for, get this, American Pie number 7.
Which we know was,
one
of your first
job, my first professional job. And I got to audition for that and I got the part. I do not take off my clothes. I'm the only one in the movie who doesn't it, and I'm very proud of that fact. But I actually ended up making friends that I had forever on that movie and learned so much. I remember the director yelling at me the first day and being like, hey, Beth, how about next time we do that take, you don't show us you're looking at your mark. Like, I was just completely out of my
comfort zone. But you were in school. I mean, you were not experienced. Is that fair to say?
That was a few years after school. Okay. I was still working at the Geffen. I worked at the Geffen through, I mean – probably the 4 years after school as well.
But when you're working at a theater, you also get to see actors on stage. Do you remember some of the actors that you got to see and say, wow, that's somebody who can act better than I can right now?
Laurie Metcalf in The Quality of Life, that performance, still to this day, I got to meet her once on like a Variety Actor on Actors Emmy special, and I like totally cried meeting her because I said, you know, I used to stand in the back of the theater and watch you every single night I was working during that show. And it did go to Broadway. The Quality of Life ended up moving from the Geffen Place to Broadway. But I've never, ever experienced, I mean, such pure craft and just, you're just riveted by her.
By the way, did you get to see her in Doll's House Part 2 on Broadway?
No.
I did. Unbelievable.
Oh, I've heard it. I mean, she's like her, Judith Light. There's so many stage actresses who are my, like, I just bow down. But that performance particularly was when I was like, I've got to figure out how to do this kind of work. Like, this is what I want to do, you know?
And you're seeing it every night, and you know that a good actor is doing something different every night, right? That every performance is a little bit different, and you get to see how a really talented actor can bring something new to his or her show, depending on the day,
and
the hour.
I mean, and the emotional capacity that she had. I mean, that show was so so rooted in its like emotional truth. And not once was there a night that I, even if it was a different, you know, maybe a different take on how she was saying the line or whatever, but there was always this rootedness. It was almost like she was like nailed to the ground, and there was a depth and a truth to her that I'll never forget.
So you're watching Laurie Metcalf, and she's doing great work on stage. And I mean this totally seriously. American Pie 7 comes along.
Yes.
And they feel like very different things. But one is Laurie Metcalf, and two is a job for a young actor.
Yes. And I actually, like, it was like the most money I'd ever made in my life, acting or not. You know, I was nannying and working at the Geffen and trying to just, I could barely make my rent every month. So to have that money coming in, too, was also like the first time in my life I got paid to do what I love. I got to learn what it was like to be on a film set and how to not look where my mark was when I was walking to it on camera.
Now, by American Pie 7, these are probably not getting theatrical release, direct-to-video.
No, it was direct-to-video. Although, I will say, it shows up on cable pretty often. It was like one of their very successful movies of the franchise. I got to meet Eugene Levy. I mean, it was great.
Meaning, like, people would come up to you and say, weren't you in American Pie 7?
It actually just happened recently at Korean barbecue. Our waiter goes, I have to say something. I've been holding it all night, and I'm
and
thinking,
you're like, Two Broke Girls.
Yeah. You know, or sometimes Hello, My Name is Doris, this movie I did that just came out. But it was like, I loved you in American Pie 7. And my fiance spit out his beer because he couldn't believe it. And I was like, wow, thank you so much. He was like, I just love that movie. And you're thinking, see,
something for everybody,
yes,
right?
Absolutely.
And did that show end up yielding other work? Did it give you the confidence to know that you could support yourself? I mean, because what often happens, you get that kind of part, and then it's like many weeks and months.
That's
important for your reel.
Tape for my reel, for my agents to pitch. And you know, I remember Gil Cates Sr. was so sweet when I got that job. And he was like, you know, let me see it. Like, bring me. So I remember bringing Gil Cates Sr.
Gil Cates Sr. at this point is producing the Academy Awards and running the Geffen
Playhouse.
But
that's how amazing.
And you bring
he
in
was.
Your DVD of American
Pie 7.
He literally
was like, bring it in and I'll watch some scenes. Tell me. I remember I wrote on a post-it the exact scenes I wanted him to watch. And he watched them and he wrote me a beautiful email. Like, the Geffen was like, the people who work there still, and Gil, obviously, and everybody was such, it was such a family. And they supported me and... Yeah, so from that, it got me more auditions, really, I think is what American Pie 7 did.
So when you end up doing a series, the process of getting it is a little bit more complicated than when you're doing a film. And maybe on a film, if it's a lead role, you might have, you know, a couple of auditions and a callback. It goes not fast, but it goes faster than a network show. So I would imagine for a show like Two Broke Girls, half a dozen, five, six, seven?
I think it was closer to seven.
What is that process like? Because each step, you know, you're getting closer, and each step, it's like, when is this going to end?
Well, and to be honest, for me, each step, I was like, I know this isn't going to happen. Like, in my head, I was like, there's just no way. I kept thinking of each audition as like, at least I get to show Michael Patrick King that I can act, and maybe he'll give me like a guest star or something, you know? But yeah, I mean, I was the first person to read for the part in a pre-read. The casting director, very, you know, was not aware of me. I'd never met her before. And she tells me the story that, which I had no idea, that she went home that night and showed it to Michael Patrick King and Whitney Cummings and said, I know you're going to think I'm crazy, but I think I found the girl.
They would never agree to that because they have to look at 200 more people,
but
right?
But then I went back. I mean, I think I did two or three then callbacks for Michael Patrick King and Whitney. And then I did a studio test, and then I did a network test. And then even after the initial network test, they were like, we really need to see her with Kat Dennings. Like, we can't, you know, and I know Michael Patrick King and Whitney fought. Like, we know it's her.
And you said, I'm not reading with Kat either. Give me the part.
I said, I've only been obsessed with her since the 40-year-old virgin. She's amazing. And then actually when Kat and I met, it was a Sunday morning. And I remember like the heads of CBS coming in like baseball caps. Like it was 8 a.m. because Kat was filming a movie in Florida. And she came and from the moment we met, it was like I instantly felt like I'd known her forever. And we I remember her like holding my hand before we walked in because, you know, tests for TV kind of feel like theater. You're in like a dark room.
Right.
They tell you no one's going to laugh. You know, there's a lot
because
of...
Because these are executives and people who are not paid to laugh. They're paid to say no, and
absolutely.
I don't like this.
Absolutely. And she just, I remember just her looking at me and saying, like, this part is yours, and if it's not, I'm out, too. Like, if
wow.
If, yeah. And
I hope she meant that.
I think she did. And you know what? It worked out because I can't imagine having a deeper connection both as an actor and a person with someone I work with ever again. I mean, it was – she's beyond sister at this point.
You get cast and then the series has to get picked up too.
Exactly. So I was still working at the Geffen.
When you got picked up.
Working as a nanny. Once we got picked up, I stopped so I could work at Two Broke Girls full time. But I was still working up until
– wow. Up until they made the call. Yeah. Were you at the upfronts? Was it one of those things where we're going to go to New York?
We heard before the upfronts because Michael Patrick King had heard. So we weren't allowed to tell anybody. But, of course, I called my family and – yeah, I mean, the pilot itself was just, we got Jimmy Burrows directed it, who I'd grown up watching. You know, he did Cheers and Will and Grace. And we kind of knew there was something special. And Jimmy sort of let us know that there was something special to the show. So we hoped it was going to get picked up. But, you know, as an actor, you never know. And it was my first one. So everybody kept telling me, you might get fired.
That's unbelievable.
I mean, I was worried they were going to fire me after the pilot.
And how many episodes now?
We finished. Now the show's over, but
right.
I think we ended up at 140 something, maybe. Yeah, it's amazing.
What does it feel like when a show like that ends? Because I would imagine it's bittersweet. The bitter being you're saying goodbye to a lot of friends and people you've grown up with. The sweet is a series takes up a lot of time and it takes up a lot of your bandwidth. And it does mean that you're prohibited for both time and competitive reasons from doing similar or other things. So do you have mixed feelings when something like that comes to an end?
I have to be honest. We did not know it was going to
end. You're gone. You're done.
And it was honestly, it was devastating because, you know, those cameramen, like – they watched me and Kat grow up. I mean, we were so young when we started the show. And to not be able to sort of say goodbye and thank you to some of those second fathers, you know, like Kevin or Brian. I mean, these guys were with me through, like, the biggest years of my life. And so I still haven't seen the crew. I haven't seen, like, I talk to my Stan and Caroline all the time. You know, we never got a goodbye. The cast still hasn't gotten together to do a dinner because everybody went off to do, like, their
hiatus.
How
did you get
jobs.
The news? How did they let you know? Was it
we
just like
got
an
a phone
email?
Call. Oh. No, we got a phone call. And Kat came over immediately. And we had lots of wine. But so that, I wish the characters could have had a chance to wrap up. I wish I could have, you know, put a button on her story in
right.
the way that it was supposed to. I think the writers feel the same way. And I wish that Kat and I had been able to show our gratitude and give like sort of a goodbye to that family that we had created. But that being said, now that it's been months finished and everything, I still get like a pang in my heart, but I can turn it on and watch it pre-dinner at 5 p.m. or on his syndication. And I still see the cast and everybody all the time. Kat's, you know, going to be a part of my wedding. And so it's great.
Well, there will be the Two Broke Women movie. So you'll all come back together at some point.
Older women, possibly with children.
Two Broke menopausal broke? Women. Who knows? Maybe
the
they
Golden
found
Girls
their way.
Episode. Yeah.
So one of the things that you have done in the last couple of years is you have worked in many different mediums. You've done a book.
Yes.
You have done, I think, a
I only laugh at that because that was a lot of work while doing a TV show. I don't recommend writing a book while you're on a show full time.
And it has a great name, The Total Me Talks, How to Ditch Your Diet, Move Your Body, and Love Your Life.
Yes.
Volume 1.
Volume only.
Volume at the only. Moment. What compelled you to put how you're living your life into a book?
Well, it's funny. The original story was they came to me and asked if I wanted to write sort of an essay book, like that a lot of comedians and actors have written. And I started to write it. I said yes, because I, you know, that's what everybody else does. And I thought, sure, I want to do this. And I started to write it. And I just wasn't comfortable putting that much of my, like, a personal life and sort of my guts out there in mm-hmm. essays for whatever reason. Maybe I will be someday down the line, but I just didn't feel like sharing that much. And also as an actor, I feel like there's, you know, you have to, there's a little bit of mystery you still want to keep. So I was always getting comments on my Instagram about what's in that smoothie, or you said you and Kat have like an onset like health trick for when your throat hurts or something. So I was like, what if I don't write an essay book, but what if I can share some of sort of my lifestyle and wellness tips? Because I feel like people always ask me. And so that's what it turned into. And I still got to share a little bit of like growing up in my life, but it didn't feel so much like my guts out there.
Right.
And my, like, why do you want to know what happened on the soccer field and I cried at 13? Like, that's my story. And it's I felt super like I just wasn't ready to like share who Beth was yet. I was like, I want you to see me as characters and different things. I'm not there yet.
But you also played competitive soccer. Was that club soccer? Did you?
I did.
Did you hope to even play in college?
I did hope to play in college.
And what
my
happened?
I broke his heart when I told him that I was going to go for theater. I mean, my parents were like, "Are you kidding us? Like,
because
how are you going to pay for
as
college?"
As the parent of a club soccer player, they have spent every waking
do you
hour
have a club soccer?
did driving. To and fro, everywhere, staying in Hampton Inns.
I mean, that was my whole childhood.
Waffle buffet,
loved
the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, you loved it because you were a kid.
But at one point, there was like, I was playing club, I was playing on the eighth grade team, and I was on junior varsity. They had asked if I would also play JV, and it was like three different teams, and all I wanted to do was sing. I just wanted to do a musical. And I had to tell my dad, you know, like, I can't do this anymore.
But you must have been good.
I was good, but I didn't love it.
Okay.
Like,
and that is going to be the difference between being a world class or college level
theater.
Player.
Yeah. I loved that much more. So, yeah.
Is there any translation from being a competitive athlete to being a performing artist?
Absolutely. Work ethic. I mean, the way, as you know, if you have a child that played soccer, I mean, learning that from a young age about what hard work how it pays off and how it's so important, and to be a part of a team and how you help each other and how it's collaborative. I mean, that's every art form as an actor you're in is a collaboration. And I feel like that was a big part of, especially soccer, with passing and playing the field and, you know, working together and not always wanting to score the goals and take the glory.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes you had to play center mid, which I hated, but, you know, I wanted to be scoring the goals.
There's a great soccer player whose name will come to me about 10 minutes from now. And he was once asked, what was the greatest goal he scored? And he said, the greatest goal I scored was a pass.
Oh,
and it's,
that's genius.
It's a great line. And I think it describes acting as well.
Absolutely.
That, you know, what you give another actor is as important as what that actor gives you and what you do with it.
Well, so. And listening. I mean, I feel like acting is listening, which is literally receiving. So it's the same thing as, you know what I mean? You're passing a ball literally on stage every night or on film. So
if you're just joining Geffen Playhouse Unscripted, we're talking with Two Broke Girls star and Geffen Playhouse alumna,
yeah.
maybe soon to return, Beth Behrs. I want to ask you about a couple other things you do, because you have a lot of different interests. What is dense, and
dense.
How important is that to you?
It's awesome. So my best friend, Matt Doyle, who is an amazing stage performer, has been multiple Broadway shows, most recently Book of Mormon. He took over for Andrew Reynolds. But he and I have been friends since we were 15. 14. We did Sound of Music, Cinderella. We were theater friends. And he was always a comic book lover. And I, of course, when I was in high school and a young girl, was like, I'm not into that. I don't want to read those. I don't know what you're into with all of that. And then as I got older, he really got me into graphic novels. I read Why the Last Man, and I read Lady Killer, and some of these like really cool female-centric graphic novels. And I had a friend who works at this amazing company called Line Webtoon that's out of Korea. And he was like, look, if you ever have an idea for a comic, and Matt had told me years ago about an idea he had about Dents having superpowers and sort of a post-apocalyptic world. And we shaped it to have, you know, a female protagonist and make it a truly female badass story. And now we're actually working on making it into an animated series with Shadow Machine and anonymous content.
But so, it also has something to say. It talks about sexuality. It talks about feminism. It talks about the planet. It is not mindless entertainment.
And this was pre our current political situation.
We might get there. We might get there soon enough. Yeah. But is that something, you know, in working on Dance and choosing the kind of parts you're going to play, the causes that you're active in, do you try to make sure that your art is married in some way to your activism, that you are doing good and not just doing work?
I mean, that's always something that was been – I mean, my parents are very active in their communities and have always taught me and my sister that giving back is more important than anything. And I think to be a good actor, you sort of have to make your life the context of your work. And so if you're not sort of able to be out in the world and helping other people or being around different kinds of people from all walks of life, then how can you even be a true artist? How can you even portray humanity in a truthful way if you're not aware? So for me, it's like any outside project I do, I always think it informs the work in some way. Even if you're making people laugh on a sitcom, you know, it's and for me, truly, like, the giving back part is something that I just feel like from a young age was not even a question. It's what I feel like I'm here to do. You know what we're all here to do.
So the soccer player is Eric Cantona. It just came to me. Eric
yes.
Cantona is a soccer player who said the best goal I ever scored was a pass. But I want to ask you about some other work you do, and it's the She Heard Power Foundation.
Yes.
Because this is amazing work and what it has meant to you personally and what it can mean to others at a time when everybody in this town and nationwide is talking about the culture of sexual assault. So explain first what She Heard Power does and why it was important to you personally before we talk about how it can help others.
Yeah. Well, She Heard Power is a 3-day program. It's equine guided empowerment. It's not traditional equine therapy. We've actually trademarked equine guided empowerment and somatic reprogramming. It's a 3-day weekend, free of cost, all accommodations, travel paid for survivors of sexual assault and abuse. And how it came about was I had a very close person to me in my life who was raped in college. And I didn't know what to do when she called me to come pick her up after it happened. So I actually Googled and I found the Rape Treatment Center in Santa Monica, thank God, this amazing organization. And they take you right away and you know, the rape kits and everything. It's the most amazing organization because you don't have to go to the emergency room and get prodded and poked after something horrible has happened to you and your body. And so through learning about that, I became super passionate about helping them. And then I actually started working with this amazing equine therapist named Cassandra Ogier, who is my partner in She Heard Power. And I started working with her and horses just to kind of help with panic attacks and anxiety for my own life.
That you had in college as a young adult?
That I've had my whole life.
I mean, ever since you were a teenager?
Ever since I was a teenager.
Wow.
And you know, once Two Broke Hit, my whole life changed, and I was getting them sometimes about doing press or talk shows. I mean, it was getting progressively worse, and I met her and found horses, and it completely changed my life as far as panic attacks go. I know.
It's the idea that if you give yourself over to an animal that is larger than you, and I assume you're maybe not riding with a saddle, that you're in
it's
direct.
It's no riding. It's all on the ground work with
so,
them.
But you are with an animal who cannot speak.
Yes.
So you are communicating non-verbally.
Yes.
And you're understanding, I guess, how you are both animals on this planet that have shared needs and can talk to each other non-verbally?
Well, horses are prey animals, so they're different than you know, people are always like, well, why not dogs? You know, there's therapy dogs, but horses only respond to authenticity because of their prey animal, you know, science behind what you know, they're the most sensitive beings on the planet, basically. And so when you realize that all you have to do to connect and communicate with them is be your authentic self, there's something so incredibly empowering in that. And realizing how to just come back to your truth and your breath and be back in your body. It sounds so simple, but think about, we're always up in our heads.
Right.
We're always on our phones. We're never just present with ourselves and our body and nature and connection. And so I actually brought the woman who was raped, who I had been dear friends with, to Cassandra. And when we saw how horses changed the PTSD that she had had from the rape, that's when the foundation was. And we had our first program in April. And it went incredible. And now we're planning for our next program in 2018.
And was that a turning point in your life, too, in terms of being able to control your panic attacks through this therapy.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm a big meditator as well. I found transcendental meditation, which helped. But I feel like horses have completely they've made me such a better actor, because isn't that what we're all trying to get to as actors, too, is being, you know, grounded and truthful and open and able to fully sort of embody what it feels like to listen and be present.
It feels like you and I are talking at what I hope could be a pivotal moment in the history, not just of Hollywood, but of this country, and the way in which women who are victimized by sexual assaulters and rapists can speak out, and that whole culture can change. I think it's really profoundly an issue in Hollywood. There's an amazing essay that Britt Marling just wrote in Atlantic Magazine about consent and about power and the James Toback story and about the dozens of women who have accused him of being assaulted and raped by him. Obviously, the Harvey Weinstein story. As you're thinking about the business in which you work, what men can do, how the culture can change, the conversations that you're having around this issue, what are some ideas? What are some steps forward? Because I would really hate to be having this conversation with anybody a year or even 6 months from now.
Yeah. Well, I think what's hard, and I was just thinking about this with everything that's obviously come out in the past few weeks, because it's the most talked about issue right now, which is wonderful. But at the same time, it's still Me Too. It's still on survivors to talk about it and to have to basically, you know, relive the horrors of what happened to them, because if they don't speak out, then nothing's going to change. So I feel like it's beyond survivors. Like, the way we can all support is by being a voice, especially men in the workplace. You know, I would have liked to see men hashtag Me Too. I made a comment about a girl's dress the other day, or Me Too. I made a comment about, you know, or I touched a girl, gave her a massage because I'm into her, or whatever, Me Too. You know, I think that that we all need to speak up, survivor or not, and stop putting it on their shoulders all the time. I mean, it's great that everybody's, you know, using their voice, and that's what we obviously need to start the conversation. And one of our goals of She Heard Power is to also empower survivors in order to bring them back to their communities and share what we need and how everybody can get involved. So, yeah, for men, you know, I think it's just as important that they sort of are kind of open and have their guts on the table, too, about the issue.
And how important is it that Hollywood, and I mean this more than theater, that film and television change the way in which women are depicted on screen, that women are agents of their own destiny, that they are not their future is not contingent on somebody else, generally a man, that they can be the lead of a story that isn't male-driven, that they don't have to be depicted in a sexualized way, that they can wear professional clothes and not skimpy clothes. How much of that kind of perpetuates not just what happens in Hollywood, but the way in which young women and men see themselves in relation to one another?
I think that's the most important, because that's our hope, right? That the generation coming up, that they won't have to experience the kind of sexual harassment or assault that our generation has, or but I think it's easier said than done at the moment, but we have some amazing female writers and artists and non-female writers and artists who I'm sure are capable of telling those stories as well. And I think what's happening now is this massive sort of conversation that's happening is a great catalyst into these stories that we need to hear and tell.
So let's talk about something maybe more hopeful, about the things that you want to do next. What you're hoping to do when you see yourself going back on stage, your upcoming projects. What are you excited about, and what's in the can or in the works?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say at the moment. I've read some amazing television shows, so obviously, you know, that is the most close thing on the horizon. But at the same time, you know, I'm still reading plays. I call my CA in New York agents all the time, being like, what's out there in theater?
Do they tell you? Or do they hide that stuff because it doesn't
no,
pay
I,
as
I was
well
just
as
in New
search.
York having a bunch of meetings. I mean, for me, really, it doesn't matter the medium, film, television, theater. I just want to do great work and tell great stories and play great women, you know? So I don't have, like, people keep asking me, well, are you going to go back in TV? Or are you going to do theater? Or are you going to focus on movies for all? And, like, I'm honestly focused on it all. I've been taking meetings on all of the above, and actually, like, been producing as well, and that's been taking up some time, and producing stories like Dense that I'd like to see get made as well. So I'm kind of taking these few months particularly to focus on those projects. I have a book called Sex with Shakespeare that I've optioned, and that I'm trying to get made as well. So that's really important to me, too. I'm very inspired by Reese Witherspoon and a lot of these women who are starting these female-driven production companies as well.
Yeah, I mean, Reese started her company.
And Britt Marling. Writer, director, producer, actress.
But everything. People like Reese started their companies because there wasn't content. There
exactly.
wasn't material for Reese to do, being
exactly.
a woman in her early 40s. So you start as an usher, concierge, I should say, at the Geffen Playhouse.
Yes.
And you get to make up this the end of the story. But you get to return to Geffen Playhouse on stage. What was the part? You can be the artistic director, the casting director. would be your dream project to be on stage doing?
I have two. I've okay. always wanted to, because we were just talking about it too, but A Doll's House, Nora, has always been the original
Ibsen.
Yes.
Not Doll's House, part two.
Not part two, although I hear that's amazing. I've always wanted to do, as well as I'm a big Neil Simon fan, I've always wanted to do Barefoot in the Park. And I know it's like very classic and funny and makes you feel good. And yeah, I would love to.
But what
do
about
that.
Odd Couple with two women? Why not? Do they have to be guys?
There is an Odd Couple female version that actually was brought to me in Cat that Neil Simon did write in the 80s. But we ended up not being able to do it. So that's a great one,
So it
too.
Does exist.
It does exist. It's called the Odd Couple female version. It needs some updating because it was,
I'm sure
it was in the 80s. But it's great. I mean, Neil Simon's a genius and it's wonderful. But yeah.
Beth Behrs, thanks so much for coming on Geffen Playhouse Unscripted.
Thank you.
That was Beth Behrs on Geffen Playhouse Unscripted. Thank you for tuning in. And if you like what you heard, you can check out past episodes. And while you're enjoying more from Geffen Playhouse Unscripted, be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts or at podcastone.com. And always remember, rate, review, and share. I'm John Horn. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to Geffen Playhouse Unscripted. Download new episodes every Wednesday at podcastone.com, on the Podcast One app, or subscribe at iTunes.
Hi, I'm Allie Hilfiger.
And I'm Steve Hash.
And we're the hosts of Sit-In on Podcast One.
Join us as we travel around the world visiting creative people in their homes, studios, and the places they work to discuss their story, process, and basically everything in between.
We're sitting down with the biggest names in the world of fashion, art, and music, like Tommy Hilfiger, Gigi Hadid, Bryan Adams, Martin Lawrence Ballard, and Zanna Roberts.
Check out new episodes of Sit-In every week, exclusively on the Podcast One app, Apple Podcasts, or podcastone.com.